life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain.
It's 2019, it's Dynamite in the Brain, it's Brian Smith and Anthony Askew, and today it is the Dynamite in the Brain Top 10 for 2014, with special guest Niall Flanagan from Secret of the Sailor Madness, and let's go!
Morning.
Woo. That's completely off the top of my head energy, unscripted energy as well. Let's see how that's going to go. I shall forget next time we do it what I said this time.
So maybe I can't remember what you said, and it's 10 seconds later, so...
So, as per usual, at the start of the year, we kick things off in a way which we don't have to watch any anime to kick things off by running down our top anime of the 5 years ago and then 10 years ago. And then when we get to 15 years ago, it will be the first famous anime podcast of the year. And Niall has kindly volunteered his time to add his twopenneth to our top tens. And what better way to start off a top 10 with number 10? Anthony, what's your number 10?
I'm going to dive straight in to 2014 with Sword Art Online Part 2. We're allowed to do second series, aren't we?
Yeah, you do what hell you like, mate. Good.
Oh, well. I might put this in number 1
This
then.
Is stuff beginning in, yeah, stuff which started in the year, essentially.
That's good. Well, it's Part 2, which was the Gun Gaia Online series. I'm sure you're all very familiar with that, Brian and Niall.
Nope.
Yeah.
It's the one where everybody thought his character was going to be a girl, but it's not. It's just a boy with long hair and very feminine looks.
What a twist.
It was disappointing, actually. I was really keen to have the main character as a female in this one, but it didn't happen. But yeah, it's one where they're in, not a, like a fantasy, it's a fantasy setting, but it's a sci-fi shooter MMO. And there's a guy going around killing people in-game, which then kills them in the real world. I can't remember what he's called, like Death Gun. Did you ask me who it is? Couldn't tell you. Can't remember.
Death Gun is sidekick Bloodface.
Exactly. It's that kind of character.
Murder Knife.
I'm enjoying it.
Hacky doke, yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, Death Gun does sound like the name of a user who would play an online game, so.
It does.
My number 10 is later on other people's lists, but I will say that it's Seven Deadly Sins, and we can talk about it when it shows up higher up the list on other people. Niall, what's yours?
Mine is Monthly Girls Nozaki-kun, based on a 4-panel manga, which I really must get around to reading sometime, because I quite loved this when it came up, but we did 30 episodes, and it didn't make no more. It concerns a fellow at school, a girl, Chiyo Sakura, comes to confess her love to him, but he turns her down. He's like, oh no, what's up with that? Then she later finds out that he happens to be the author behind her favorite shoujo manga, which he does under a pseudonym, and he uses all of his interactions at school with his friends and so forth to serve as inspiration for the romances to scenarios in his comics. So Lamed Sakura, who kind of he browbeats into being his assistants, instead of doing that and rope in their friends or engineer situations so they can see how this like cliche shoujo romance comic situation will actually play out in real life. Offer some hilarious commentary on all of those. It's really good stuff. Good to see like other friends and friends and relatives and people at school are some kind of like analog or twisted reflection of all of those shoujo cliche archetypes you all know and love or despise so well. So yeah, it's only a short series. This one season all together. I wish they would have made more of it, but that just means I should go out and read a comic sometime, didn't I?
It does. This is one of those shows where I'm like, surely that's not 5 years ago. And then I remember, oh, we're doing it at the start of the year. So technically it's not 5 years ago. And also, I think just people haven't shut up about it for 5 years. And also there's lots of similar series, which I'm probably mixing up with it, which have come in the past 5 years.
Yeah. When I watched it, I just parsed it out very sparingly. Maybe it felt like it was, I just knew, oh, after this, there's no more. And each episode is so good.
My praise, this is your number 10. That's not even a top fiver.
Pretty good. I really like one character, like Seo, who is just... she's like the Chiyo Sakura, like best mate. And she's kind of like the kind of tough sort of tomboy sort of girl you would get in these kind of things. But she's just completely... It's not that she's like, you know, kind of like brash or whatever. She's just like completely oblivious to any kind of romantic sort of atmosphere. Like she can't like read the room and think, this person's trying to ask her out, you know. Oh, was that what his problem was? Oh, okay. It's just completely as barred as aware of every situation. For one example, there's also so many other kind of love characters whom I love and miss dearly, which I should get to reading the comic maybe.
Anthony, what's your number 9?
Number 9. It's Rage of Bahamut, the first series.
Genesis.
Yep, and it's higher in someone else's list, so we'll get there.
Yep. My number 9 is tangentially related to Rage of Bahamut Genesis, because a lot of the people who worked on the series were working on that and not on this movie. That is Tiger and Bunny The Rising. This is the proper Tiger and Bunny movie, in that it's all 100% original material as opposed to 33% original material like the beginning was. So in this, we get the new hero, Golden Ryan, show up to replace Tiger as his powers are waning. And then I can't remember who the villains are now. I know who they're going up against, which is like a TV director, or a producer, and it also delves into Nathan's, origin story as well. And then it took them far too long to make this film. I saw it at a screening with the director there, and he basically explained they kind of got caught in their own thoughts. They like were overthinking it, which is why it took so long, because I think they've been, if they hadn't been such a success, obviously there wouldn't have been another movie, but then they also wouldn't have been worrying about trying to produce something for that fan base they never imagined they were going to get in the first place. And then it's taken another 5 years to get a follow-up, which didn't have anything to do with Tiger and Bunny at all, apparently, in the form of Double Decker. But supposedly Double Decker is only part of a grander Tiger and Bunny animation output. So whether
the Tiger and Bunny's cinematic universe,
quite possibly,
that's what we're doing these days, isn't it?
Yeah, so we'll see whether there's actually any real Tiger and Bunny stuff coming out in the near future, because otherwise this is the last time we saw them in cartoon form.
I've not seen that one yet. It's still a gap. I think I've got it somewhere, but
I don't have it. And I don't have my copy of Beginning yet, which I got for that. All the anime 12 Days of Christmas sale thing still hasn't arrived. Mm. I'll be chasing it again in a week's time if it's not shown up.
Have words.
Yeah, not so much for that.
I heard something from them and already came there. Or for Christmas, I already came there like a couple of days ago at time of recording. So.
Yeah, I saw, but most people seem to have got theirs by now. And I'm like, yeah. I'm wondering whether it arrived, and it's disappeared, or whether it's just gone missing. Or whether they never sent it. It's quite a decent possibility with all their palaver that it was never sent in the first place, even though they've been told it's been sent. Niall, what is your number 9?
It's higher up the list, but I'll just mention the Chica the Coffin Princess, which someone else loved very much more.
Yeah, also that was one of the things which made it onto the covers of New Type for this year.
My gosh.
Chica, the Coffin Princess. What else? I shall tell you what else. Fate Stay Night. Gundam Reconquista.
Wait, one second. What's this on the covers thing?
These were things which were on, if you were listening to what I was saying rather than reading the notes, you'd have heard me. These are the other things which are on New Type covers. Explained to the listener.
I know, and I jumped to the notes, you see. And then I can only do one thing at a time.
Well, listen to my voice rather than read my notes. So Gundam Reconquista in G, the Idol Master movie. Crossange, Rondo of an Angel and the Dragon, Puella, Magi, Madoka, Magica, the Movie, Rebellion, Sword Art Online, Kill the Kill, Free, Expelled from Paradise, Akuma no Riddle, and Akuma no Riddle, and yeah, the final thing I'd noted was Chaika, the Coffin Princess. Let's see how many of these show up in our top 10 lists.
Indeed.
Well, some of them can't because they're 2013 things which were carrying on into 2014. Wait till you hear the next when we get to the 2009 one. There was like very little variation. It was like a bunch of stuff got, I think one show got three covers and another two shows got two covers each. It's like,
slow to hear.
Yeah. On to number eight, Anthony.
For me, it is the loveliest of Mukos, lovely Muko. And it's about a lovely little sheepdog who lives with her owner called Komatsu. And this is the second series.
It is. It's the one you've not seen.
Which is the one I've not seen, but I'm going to guess it's better than my prior two.
I think.
You know, I can't quite say it's better than the ones further down. To be honest, if it keeps up with the same style, yeah, which I can't imagine it suddenly having a style change.
Yeah,
I think it's on for a winner.
Yeah, well,
Well, how can they go wrong? Literally the most mundane situations to stick them in is still great. I'm going to watch some of season two just so I can say
it's different casts, different production studio. I've not seen it, but I imagine it's pretty different to the one you've seen.
Now I'm nervous.
This is the second. Just think, Anthony, you can't do it again. Next time you'll get the actual right one in there.
The worst thing is I did take this out because I was like, oh, I haven't seen it, so I'm going to take it out. And I thought, there's nothing else I want in, so it jumped back in. I'm nervous now. I'm going to check some out. Just
it's better than two shows you have seen.
In my expectations are high. I feel I know what to expect from it, but clearly not.
I've not seen it. Maybe it is a miracle that the third version of the animation was identical to the previous two, but I'm going to guess it would feel significantly different if going back to it having watched that third season. My pick for number eight is Sega Hard Girls. Niall, what's your pick for number eight?
My goodness, it's just like you're reading my mind. It's high school Sega Hard Girls.
So this was a 13-part show, which I think I had to use VPN to watch. I don't think it's necessarily actually on the UK Crunchyroll. And it's all about three girls going to school, and they are the Dreamcast, the Sega Saturn, and the Mega Drive.
Oh, God.
Learn about fascinating Sega gaming software, and yeah, they participate in said software as well.
I think each episode you get the more out of it if you're familiar with whatever games they're referencing.
Yeah, there's still a lot of fun in there. Like,
there is, yeah.
There's the Virtua Fighter episode where they go into Virtua Fighter and get their asses kicked, but then kick ass right back by cheating or just using cheap combos. Was one. There was Space Channel 5. And also one with Sonic the Hedgehog, where it's basically them all going, wow, Sonic the Hedgehog, what a cool dude.
That is. Isn't that the one where they're in the arcade machine?
Is that one where they're in Breakblade? Not Breakblade.
Border Break. Yeah, that's it.
Arcade robot game. Yeah. I know it anyway.
Yeah, Border Break is the one.
That's it.
Yep. It's goofy fun, and there's some episodes which are particularly exceptional, which is what nudged it above Tiger and Bunny and Seven Deadly Sins for me. Number seven, Anthony.
Seven Deadly Sins.
Wow, seven at seven.
It is, that's what I did it for.
Niall, what's your number seven?
Again, it's like a twisted mirror, the Seven Deadly Sins.
We've got good taste.
Yeah.
Oh, the same taste. You do the little synopsis. I'm terrible at synopsisizing anything. So
okay.
You do it.
okay, you're get this. What if, like, King Arthur and all the similar, like, romance era, like, tales of knights and chivalry were all, like, an anime all together at the same time? It's like a similar, like a fantasy realm called Britannia, which is not at all like actual real-life Britain. And a princess of that kingdom is, no, she's escaped. She's done a runner because dark forces are conspiring to take over the throne. So she seeks the most wanted criminals who were former knights themselves in the order, but were thrown out for being so.
Oh, we lost you again, Niall.
Damn it all.
Or for the first time on this podcast. But
probably for the first time. This princess, she goes, she finds seven lady sins, then finds out they're not so awful after all. They're actually, they're all fucking weirdos, but they're the ones who are the strongest weirdos that she needs to help to stop the evil guys from usurping her father's throne. It is a nothing, like, on the surface of it, massively sort of groundbreaking or innovative. Well, it's innovative in some ways, but it's more of like a nice melange. I always say a kind of comforting, warming stew of familiar shonen action tropes just done very, very well. I think it would be a much more... have a lot more momentum, a lot more kind of prominent, maybe higher up this list, if we weren't getting the seasons like a year and a half removed from what they are, because this is unfortunately one of those shows that got pretty early set up to thrown into the Netflix jail. So you don't see it for a long time after it's aired. And these are kind of very long seasons, so you don't see them for a good long time. But just recently, we had a second season eventually drop up on Netflix, along with the film that came out God knows how long ago as well. So maybe you can have a second wind, then a revival off back of that, perhaps.
I just love the characters. I'm so in love with the sins that I've met so far. I think they're all, I just say, nothing groundbreaking, but it's charming. I like the characters and their kind of relationship, their love and their hate between each other, and just how they work or don't work as a squad. I think it's cool.
Mm.
I enjoy it a lot.
My issue with it is I enjoy it more as the comic, which is why it's at 10 for me rather than higher.
Yeah. I kind of dove into the comic, you know. Well, I could probably go on after I finished watching the TV show, but there's still, I think, Parasite TV show where it's like, ah, this is just kind of fun. It's kind of similar to One Piece, where you go back and watch an episode with a chapter or chapters were animated, and then just enjoy the probably someone getting punched in the face more often than not.
Well, how is the manga so good? Because I don't feel like the series dilly-dallies.
No, they're just it's really well drawn. That's the fact. The animation cannot match the line work of the comic. It's the same problem Black Clover has.
Yeah. Like, what drew me in, like, initially to even watch it or look at it in the first place was I kind of liked they were pretty uncommon looking character designs. They didn't fall in with a lot of the sort of conventions of the time. What characters got little, like, for instance, like Meliodas, the main hero, he's got a little kind of button nose, he's a little short arse guy. I like the designs as well of all the various armors that what heroes I'm but it uses. It's very, very kind of very lumbering, very often very weirdly detailed sets of armor on the helmets and the pauldrons and such. And we're kind of reading the comic and you see he's just filling the background with loads of these weirdos in armor and kind of like very cool kind of armor sets. And they're going, who's that guy? Is he a main character? No, he's just some guy in the background. It's like he's putting much kind of detail and thought even just a little bits.
Mm. I'll have to read some of them. It's on the Crunchyroll app as well, isn't it?
It is.
See, I've got so much to read, and I am chugging through stuff, but so much to read.
I think that it reaches people on Netflix. It just doesn't reach the same people necessarily as the other anime we watch. And Black Clover has managed to reach more people being on Crunchyroll, so if you want to make a comparison. But Seven Deadly Sins has reached a lot more people than all those episodes of Gintama which have aired on Crunchyroll. And, yeah, more horrifying is that Goblin Slayers reached twice as many as the both of them.
What are you saying? Because I remember that was on my... And I've still not had the chance to watch it. But everybody seems to love it. And is it creepy?
Yes, yeah, because there's a lot of cunts in the world.
Whoa, is it that extreme? Wow.
It's...
Oh, that's we've lost you again, Niall, as you were about to go into your rant.
I'm back.
You're censored by the Goblin Slayer.
The Goblin Slayer looks like a cool character, though.
I thought that might be fine, it's the underlying thing, or it's the underlying... The storyline is very nationalistic without being nationalistic, and racist without being racist. And it's, we've got to keep these undesirables away from our women, is essentially the plot line.
Yeah. Right. It is trying to emulate some of the atmosphere and style of Berserk, with none of the heart or feeling or anything that makes Berserk actually good or enjoyable to read past the relentless misery and death.
So the people who like it are ignorant.
They're people who their basest urges are easily appealed to.
Right. Well, I like the look of the Slayer himself or herself. I don't even know anything about the Slayer, but it looks badass.
My number 7 is Lupin the Third, Jigen's Gravestone, or Tombstone of Daisuke Jigen, or whatever it's called. I can't remember the proper title. So this is the first of the Takeshi Koike Lupin OVAs. It is good, but
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, the Goemon's better. The Goemon one is so much better. But no, it's fun, and there's some good stuff in it. There's like the weird fight Fujiko has in that creepy club, and the reveal of what the assassin's been doing, and how Lupin and Jigen get past him, and obviously it's Koike, so it looks great. And the character designs are amazing. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to the third one whenever it arrives.
I think this would have been in my top 10, which is such a weird, unfair way to do it, had I not seen the Goemon one.
Yeah, the problem is the Goemon is so good it's eclipsed it now.
It has, it really, and it's a shame because this is good on its own. But side by side, it's leagues.
I believe the Goemon one is now on US iTunes. Unfortunately, it's not on UK iTunes.
Only a matter of time.
Well, it'll be along with the Jigen's Gravestone. There's no Lupin on iTunes for us. In fact, when you search for Lupin the Third, Jigen's Gravestone, one of it is our podcast.
Oh, right. Go look for Lupin the Third.
Oh, no, for the Goemon run, rather. But yeah.
How the hell do I have... Oh, wait, I imported Daisuke Jigen's Gravestone from America. That's probably why I own it.
Okay, next up is the popular number, which comes after 7. Number 6, when you're counting down, at least.
I didn't know it was that popular, but...
compared to 7, because, of course, 7, 8, 9. So it's the least favourite of the top 10 numbers.
Right, well, my number 6 is Giovanni's Island, something that we saw at Leeds Film Festival all that time ago, and it broke my heart. I've watched it multiple times, and it breaks my heart every single time. And the story is about two brothers who live on a small island somewhere in Japan. It's shortly after the Second World War, and the Soviets come kind of occupy this island. And it's this story of kind of growing up with this going on, and then they get shipped across the world. They split up from their family, and it's just a really heartbreaking story that's told really well. I actually made my mum and dad watch this dubbed. Obviously, they couldn't be bothered with subs. And the dub's fine. I think there's a lot of... I wish this film got a bit more praise, because I feel like it's only me that loves it. I'm probably not the only one, but I love this a lot. I challenge you not to cry if you watch this.
Yeah, it's something which doesn't seem, nobody seems to talk about anymore.
I don't know why, because it's like, it's timeless. It's that, you know, it's not something that would go out of fashion, this kind of emotional storytelling. That it's got sibling drama, family drama.
I wonder who picked it up, because I think part of the reason, well, obviously Ghibli's got the worldwide name anyway, but also the fact is that Optimum or Canal, whoever it is now, have got the TV rights. And so therefore the Ghibli stuff is regularly on Channel 4
Film
movies.
Film 4,
that's the word I'm looking for. And I wonder if this, if they had, whoever's got this had TV rights for it and could get it on TV, then people would discover
it. I think
it
would. I think that's what it needs, yeah. It needs that kick into the open for everyone to ravage at it. But, weirdly not. But my mum and dad really enjoyed it. Thought it was great. It's a seal of approval from a normie. Well, presumably normies, I don't know.
How normal can they be? You're their son.
I know, in all fairness. Yeah. All right, they're not normies. Have you seen this one, Niall? I know, obviously, Brian saw it.
I've only ever heard you fellas talk about it. Seen it. I've noticed it, rather, or read it a couple of times in your convention programming rooms, thinking, oh, maybe I should, traipse in and make a viewing. But then, inevitably, I got to meet people and hang out and catch up and get lunch and play board games or do panels, so the viewing rooms don't see a lot of you these days.
Do you know if I would like to watch this in that kind of setting? Because, as you say, it's such a different mood at a con, whereas I'd rather sit and watch this in front of a TV in the comfort of your home. So if you do shed a tear, not that I've got anything to hide about crying, but you will cry. It's a sad tale. And it's also pretty feel good at times as well. Try not to spoil.
My number six is none of those things that Anthony ascribed to Giovanni's island. It is Joker, or Mysterious Joker, a cartoon. I think it's ran for 2 seasons, so a total of 52 episodes, from Korokoro Comics, based on the Hideyasu Takahashi manga. It is a comedy about a thief and his apprentice, who's a ninja, Hachi, and also the various other thieves and their sidekicks, who are all trained by the elderly thief, Silverheart, as they go up against the evil thief, Professor Clover, in the first series. And one of the big appeals to me at the time is it's written by Dai Sato, is the head writer on it, and has some other writers from my number one show, which we'll get to when we get to my number one. So I came off my number one show, I was like, oh, I enjoyed that person's writing, what else are they doing? Hang on, they've got a show on right now. I better watch that. It's a lot of fun. I have a soft spot for those Korokoro adaptations. Maybe my mental age is that of a 6-year-old. and that's what I want from my cartoons.
Good.
Exactly. What do you want for your cartoons, Niall, at number six?
I want to see Noda Tokusatsu drama series Garo get turned into a cartoon, which is what we have with Garo the First and some of the Garo the Animation, subtitled The Card Seal of Flame, precipitating a franchise of adaptations of the Garo Tokusatsu show. So, longest for most of these things is it's going to be like the land has been menaced by monsters called horrors, which are kind of manifestations of people's darkest desires or deepest desires, but they manifest in a horrific and awful way and turn into a monster. So it's a job of this hidden order of knights who had hunted down and disposed of them before they become a problem. And the strongest knights of this order are what ones who inherit the armor. It's the Garo. They're the ones called Garo, and the guy got kind of a big gold armor set, very, very fancy, elaborate, makes him look like kind of like a lion man, or as I keep saying, like Dragon Slayer Ornstein from Dark Souls. And this installment takes us to a fictional version of Spain in the Middle Ages. And it was like, you know, the kind of new heir to the mantle of Garo, who was kind of inherited from his father, who was formerly the holder of that. And it's kind of stated, well, during a sort of semi-Inquisition, because the villain of the piece, he's like the prime minister or grand vizier, or whatever you want to call it, that he's kind of on to go witch hunt to sort of capture all these horrors. But the knights, the Mackay knights, are getting caught up in the net as well, and they're going to kind of operate in secret to try and take this guy down. Like, this is probably the bad guy's called Mendoza as well, so you can, there's like so many guys in the series. He does something evil. Yeah, it was pretty good fun. It was also followed by a film, Garo, Divine Flame, which I found. I think it has a better line in sort of the harrowing morality plays of the people who fall prey to the horrors, which is something that kind of falls by the wayside. Also followed as well by another series, Garo Crimson Moon, which is like, and then it was pretty cool.
What was pretty cool? We lost what was pretty cool there.
Garo Vanishing Line, of course. As I vanish into the oral ether.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is one of those shows where I think I've seen the first episode and I haven't seen the rest of it. Otherwise, it may have been up for.
Yeah, it was
inclusion.
Difficult to get out of time because when I was watching it, it was not available.
Yeah, not available, nice. Much like Niall's voices occasionally due to Skype.
I don't know what's doing that.
Yeah, I'll have to check whether it's your microphone at some point. Just do some recordings. Are you recording? Is it everything record? When you record, is it? Anyway, this is discussion off podcast, not on podcast. But
now people want to know.
Showing light beyond magic. Number five. Anthony, what's your number five?
It's me. Taikyu. The very popular and much loved volleyball anime about high school boys or junior high school boys at this point who join a team. They get into volleyball, they play volleyball, they win and they lose, which is good. I don't want to just see them win all the time. And it's super fun. It's super fun. I need an excuse to watch through it all because we were going to do an episode on it. So I was like, all right, I don't want to watch season two until we do the recording. And then we decided we weren't doing an episode on it. So I was kind of like halfway through season one again. So I need to kind of watch through it again. But I love this. They managed to make volleyball really exciting. Not to say that it's not, but it's not something I would ever gravitate to as a sport. But they do a great job of it. And I've only scratched the surface because I know there's a lot of good characters that get introduced later on. And yeah, I'm excited to finally dive in. I just need that push over the net, I suppose.
My number five is Yo-Kai Watch. The original flavor Yo-Kai Watch started in 2014. Notable, I think, for probably exploding the workload of Yuichi Kato. I think after this, he was getting a lot of serious composition jobs. Following, he had a few before that. Weirdly, he started out his career as with a serious composition job on a show about dog walking, I think. I think called Let's Go Straight or something. But yeah, so Yo-Kai Watch has lasted till last year, and then it ended and became Yo-Kai Watch Shadow Side, which he's writing as well. But it's not as funny as the original Yo-Kai Watch. It sort of broke through, I think, from just being like a kids show to parents and like all ages knowing who all these characters are. And then they got greedy and put too many games out and killed the franchise's popularity.
Oh no.
And also I read like loads of people have walked out of Level 5 and that's why their two big releases delayed. That's the rumour, I believe, this week as we're recording. That's why that new Inazuma 11 thing, which the series promoting the new game, which was supposed to have been out, has finished, and they're into the second season of it now with a new name. And yeah, so it looks like Yokan. Well, I think they've already announced that Inazuma 11 Ares and Yokai Watch 4 have been delayed. And the rumour is that a bunch of people walked out of level 5. Reasons unknown. So, yes, has Yokai Watch seen its last? We shall see. I mean, it's still on the air, I believe, as Shadow Side, but... where is he? Something he's working... What was that? Bomber Bar Hunter. I'm sure that's like a bad translation. Oh, that was Baku Suri Bar Hunter. Yeah, most of the other thing Yuichi Kato works on are stuff I want to watch, but nobody picks up or fan subs. Like that Duel Masters thing we thought looked amazing last year, and nobody translated.
Oh, yeah, that thing. Jesus. What happened to that, huh?
Well, Takara Tomy post it every week on their channel, but... yeah, no one fansubs it. Someone fansubs the live-action Magical Girl thing they put up there every week, but not Duel Masters. Niall, what is your number 5?
Nender.
What? Well, you immediately broke up as soon as I said 5.
It's not meant to know.
Is his microphone given out? I don't know. It shouldn't be. I don't know why.
It doesn't sound like that kind of cutout. I think it sounds more connection related than... But I don't know.
Yeah, I've no idea. Immediately lost you again.
What the hell?
And then it never breaks up the immediate time when you react to us telling you that it's broken up.
God. See, the problem with this new Skype is that you can't see where the connection thing is strengthened around like that, so I don't know.
And I always find that quite unreliable anyway, to be honest.
Yeah, because it always used to say, like, what cannot get any information regardless, my end. Anyway, now I'm going to take another shot at saying what your title is.
Here we go.
Let's try it now. Forbidden words here. number 5.
No, it cut it off again.
You had the perfect setup.
What the fuck?
Nobody wants to. The internet has banned you from saying the title. The most dangerous of anime.
Can't stop me.
Shiro Barco, yes.
You can't stop me now. Well, you can try and stop me. Oh, God. Production problems a plague. Also, the characters of this show, which follows like 5 young women and their guest colleagues, who are trying to break into the anime industry in various ways, shapes, and forms as producers or animators or voice actors or anything like that. This is mostly notable for being featuring quite a number of cameos via, you know, like, a lot of homages, I would say, to a lot of famous characters in anime production history. So. Famous directors, animators, and so forth turn up in it, and also kind of strange versions of studios you may know as well, besides PA Works, who make the anime, but also like get it's like guys from Studio Bones, and there you get Hideaki Anno turns up for a while to give our main character some sage advice about what she's do with her career. It's a nice thing, a nice little piece, besides being quite a nice story of these young women, like, you know, managing to make a name for themselves and kind of get and go places in the world and find that even though the reality of their passion and what they want to get into, whatever they enjoy in life, the reality of making it is a little less glamorous, they still want to, like, work their hardest and make something good out of it. I was watching this at a time in my life when I was making sort of similar strides into becoming a TV professional, shall we say, where I was interning at a production house and getting run ragged by it. But, you know, little by little, I was able to kind of like get a job or get an opportunity here and there and work your way up. So watching this alongside that real life struggle kind of helped buoy me up sometimes, because it's not always as like as clean cut as you get on TV, as the girls find out over the course of the series. But boy, when it does work out, you know, when all the hard work pays off, it's something special. So I think, you know, it's nice, and it's nice in that regard as well. You know, it's that a lot is made of the other kind of chemistry and homage, which are also good as well. And there's some eye opening stuff about how ambient production actually works. But I think the emotional core of it is also very strong as well. And we'll see where that turns up, if at all. And then, funnily enough, Tsutomu Mishima, the director of it, they make like two fake, well, not real, less actual real anime things in Shirobako, and one of those ideas is kind of semi being made into a real anime TV series in our own world, or at least covering similar material as one of the fake animes, so also being directed by him. So I was like, oh, let's see how that turns out. Hopefully better than it did.
I take it you said hope it better than it did in the anime.
Did in the series.
Did it did in Shirobako, which was, you know, it had a lot of problems with it. So hopefully it goes a lot smoother for him when he's making this other one.
Well, I was doing it in CG, so that's be sorted. Maybe that will be Shirobako season 2, where they have to, maybe this is research for Shirobako season 2, so you can write it about CG animation production.
But they had a bit about CG anime in Shirobako, the original series. So.
Is that right?
Yes.
Anthony, you're number 4.
Number 4, lost me list. I found it again. It's Trigger the Coffin Princess. First watched by me to join Niall and Dwayne on Secret of the Sailor Madness. And it was a pleasure to talk about this show. It feels like a million years ago since I've watched it. I even bought the manga following and watched it, but... Mm-hmm. Trika is about a young girl named Trika who was the daughter of this... we don't really know much at early days, but about the daughter of this emperor, and she's carrying around his remains, trying to find the entirety of his body so he can have a proper burial. And it goes very much beyond that. She meets people on the way. They kind of adventure around, and there's some very... kind of weird turns in which it goes to that. I don't really want to spoil it, because I think you get a lot from the show by unexpected routes that the story goes down and kind of reveals that it has. But I think I've said this before, I think Chaika is such a... At first I was like, oh, this character's going to be annoying, but she's very lovable, and you kind of, I feel drawn into her as a character, and you kind of want to protect her, and you, which is obviously what her friends do, or they don't always enter as friends, but they do kind of get along by the end. But I think it's a great show with some good characters, with a great setting, and I'm just sad there's not more. I know there's a lot more to the manga that occurs, but I would like another series.
Well, it's light novels originally, wasn't it? You could go read those, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've got them on my iPads. They're good to go, but I've already got too much to read.
Yeah.
So yeah, chuck it out as a series.
Yeah, like, Usually light novel is like a term you don't want to go up too often when you're talking about your anime things, because, you know, their good adaptations are few and far between. But I think this is one of the better ones, all right. And as you say, Anthony, it is probably because of how it subverts your expectations with Chaika herself, because you see this little girl, she's wearing kind of the frilly outfit, you thought, oh, what's this going to be about? But she was immediately endearing, because for whatever reason, Chaika, she talks like a caveman. She goes, me, Chaika, me, want, help, bury father. Me need food now. And secondly, big fuck off anti-tank cannon gun. Because in this realm, wizards don't use like magic wands to cast spells. They just have various firearms that they shoot the spells out of instead. So, you know, this little tiny little girl, massive anti-tank rifle, plus like a caveman. Ah, yeah, this is great. Who could not love this?
Exactly. And it's not, at first, it's kind of like amusing the way she speaks, but you just get used to it. And it's like less played off for goofs or anything like that, and it's, I just think she's such a good character, and she kind of learns to be a person, not thoroughly, but to some degree as the series goes on. I think it's an unsung hero, this series. I really do. Really do.
Righto. I was just looking at the Wikipedia thing. It looked very somebody's role-playing game in the descriptions of all the characters.
It probably is, but those genre tropes sometimes fine. Lean into them sometimes.
You can see a different version of it in what we're going to talk about next at number four.
Yes. Number four for me and Niall is Rage of Bahamut Genesis, the first Rage of Bahamut series, of which there'll shortly be three, which is pretty good going for a game which ended, I don't know, a year or so ago. So this is based on the mobile game, though it doesn't really feel too gamey in the... in the telling. I think it just has a few characters and names and monsters you'd recognise if you played the game. You wouldn't go.
Yeah, I think there's something with like the bounty hunting thing where they can like collect the fucking guys they hunt down. I guess that's probably some kind of allusion to what you actually do in the game, maybe.
Yeah, that's quickly out the window, probably yes, for the first episode. But it tells the tale of a bounty hunter, Favreau Leone. And a would-be knight, but he now has to be a vampire, as a vampire hunter, a bounty hunter, Kaiser Lundfard. And they run into, they get involved with Amira, a young woman with secrets that the series revolves around, and eventually also a necromancer called Rita. Oh, also Joan of Arc's in there. And loads of demons and angels and holy war and a massive dragon called Bahamut.
See, you've described the start of it. Now, this is why it's further up in my list. Sorry, further down in the list. Is that right?
Yes.
Well, it's back. It's number 9.
Yeah.
I like this best at the start, and then I don't like it as much when it ups the stakes to beyond this small kind of quite a mundane, not mundane, sorry, but I like it when this is being small scale, not when there's a huge dragon. Like the end of season one, I just wanted it to end.
Well, that's...
I felt bored.
It was the end, so it did.
It did, and no, but I was kind of not in the right reason wanting it to end. I wanted everything to go back to how things was with, like, them wandering around and being pals and all that stuff. Maybe I'm just too simple for it. Even for a mobile game. You know what, Greg? Is that just me? That I
think that's
like
just you.
When,
yeah. I think
like all those additional characters, like the demon with the two puppies.
What? Cerberus is great.
And most of these people are just really early on. It's not like they take you by surprise later in the series.
And that's when it starts weaning off a little. And from the beginning, I was... on board, beyond on board. I was sailing the ship for this ship. I was super into it. And then, just the more it introduces, I was like, oh, okay. And it's put me off watching season two. I've still not got around to it yet. And I own it as well.
Well, I'm going to say, if what you're after in season one, you get even less of in season two. So.
The sad thing is, I really want to love this because I love the designs of the characters. I just don't like where the story goes. It goes too crazy.
But you might like Nina Drango more, in which case then you might like season two better.
Nina Drango?
Yeah, she's the main character in season two.
Oh, she's I didn't know it did that. Oh, she looks good.
She is fantastic. And the voice actor for her as well is equally fantastic and a big part of the appeal.
I'm back on board. I'm back on board. There's something about the character designs that are just so good. And it really sells it for me. That's what really sold it originally. But that's my two-piece.
Yeah, I think it gets past the thing which some of these mobile game adaptations have where they're trying to wedging a bunch of characters who are all designed by tens of artists in the mobile game. Chain Chronicle, I'm looking at you. Anything else to add, Niall, about Rage of Bahamut?
From what I can leave them, it seems like they have, as long as they mention these things from the game, one mention this character or this system. They otherwise seem to have had carte blanche to do whatever the hell they like in it, and I kind of wish more game editors like this, because it would be much more freeing and less constrictive experience, you know, when don't feel beholden to have to do this exact same thing as the game was. But not everybody played the game the same way, so I think we should just pick one version of this and do our best with it.
Right, number three for me and Anthony is Stardust Crusaders, but that's further up Niall's list. And Niall's number three
is further up someone else's list.
Yes. Both of our lists.
That is Pink Pop.
This is going to be confusing. Right,
yes.
Now,
yes. Number two for Anthony is Space Dandy. For me is Ping Pong, and for Niall is Space Dandy. But they are all further. They're all number ones for other people. So Anthony, what is your number one?
Let's break the silence. Ping Pong, which was my top series of all time, according to my last list. So, what more can you possibly say, other than the fact that it is Masaki Yuasa, who I'm just in love with his work. You can't put a foot out of place right now. It's about Ping Pong. It's about two children, Pecco and Smile, who are friends. They're kind of friends out off the court, off the table, are they called? Yeah, off the table?
Yeah, table.
Out of the sport, they're friends. But then they kind of build up this rivalry because they're both very good, very different styles, and their styles kind of reflect them as people and like kind of their personalities. And it's just a really good, I want to say, down-to-earth series about real, what feels like really interesting people and how they kind of progress and how they go through their careers or lack of careers, depending on which character we're talking about. And I just think there's not much else like it visually as a sports show. It does everything that I want to watch. It makes the sport super exciting. Though in all fairness, ping pong is quite exciting in many ways. Perhaps more so than volleyball, like in Haikyuu. But no, this visually great, music's great. Everything about this is top-notch for me, and that's why it's my numero uno of, I don't know what 2014 is in that language, but 2014. I was going to try and say, I don't know how you would say it. Yeah.
You're about to be clever.
Latin, 2014.
And then realise you weren't clever. Well, good news, Anthony. Later in the year, there's a chance that we may watch some of the other ping pong anime.
Oh, we also have the live action to watch as well.
Oh, yes.
Which I've got on DVD.
Yeah, I thoroughly agree with everything Anthony said regarding ping pong. That's why he's my number two.
Yeah, it's great. And this like top three was very much like a three-way tie.
Yeah.
Well, equally, but I need to put them in some kind of numerative order here, otherwise we'll never get through this episode.
Yeah. Well, for me, my number one is way ahead of everything else, because it's my favourite anime of all time, and that is Space Dandy. Which I think probably started, I think I do believe it started the week we're recording this, 5 years ago.
So this is happy birthday.
Oh. Happy birthday to Space Dandy. He's 5 years old and none the wiser.
Which one of them is 5 years old?
That's true. Yeah. Definitely, I mean, I loved it from episode one and it just kept on getting better. It's my ideal anime in that it's a bunch of idiots, but they could change who's making each episode every episode, so it changes wildly in visual styles. And if you hear a pinging, I believe that's probably Lewis asking us if we're ready to record the next podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I believe it's still on Netflix.
I don't know now. It comes and goes like a mirage in the desert.
Is that correct? I'll do a quick check. A quick Space Dandy update. I mean, I've bought it, I bought it 2.5 times, as discussed on episode 300. If you want to find out more about it, listen to that. it was literally last episode. It's still on Netflix. So go watch.
I searched Skype Dandy in Google because I wanted to find some Space Dandy merch. And I typed Skype Dandy. Sorry.
You don't need any more Space Dandy merch, Anthony. You've bought more than I have.
Have I?
Didn't you buy a statue or two?
Oh, shit, I did, yeah. No, I bought the Dandy statue and I was going to get the... Oh, what's it the boobies lady called?
Honey.
Honey, that's the one. I was going to get a statue of her, but I settled with Dandy.
Yeah. I never bought any merch.
Not a true fan. How can I be your number one if you don't own any merch?
I bought the anime 2.5 times.
Half measures, if you ask me. It should be 3.
I got the soundtrack, at least, of all the sides, because that has a pretty class soundtrack. Again, yeah. similarly eclectic, and a lot of people involved in it.
Yes, yeah. Niall, what is your number one?
It's Jojo's Bizarre Adventure Star Wars Crusaders, the anime that launched 1,000 podcasts. this is very much... I could say Ping Pong and Space Dandy are very much probably surpassing this in terms of this kind of artistic merit and quality and this everything like that. I think it is ahead of me because JoJo's I've always enjoyed something like this, but it's always a special place in me, which has become even more special now that the rest of the world has come to embrace it as well. So I was like, this love is all being shared around with a much wider audience now, and this feels fantastic, because there's more than as well, actually a lot of little disparate pockets of fandom that now have all been interlinked by the growing popularity of Jojo's franchise, and I think this was a real turning point for it, because adapting the much-loved Part 3 Star Crusaders arc, which has previously been done in OVA form in years past. But this is doing it the whole thing, beginning to end, all the way from Jotaro awakening to his stand ability, which is a new thing they added for this part of the story. Japan, and then traveling cross-continent with his granddad and some other fucking muscly weirdo dudes to hopefully get out of Egypt and kill a vampire and break his curse so that his mother will survive.
We're losing you. Just
fuck's sake.
Must be the work of an enemy stand.
Yeah.
Enemy stand user. It's also as well, you're seeing the kind of growing ambition and talent of David Production, who were not a studio that anybody really had any thoughts about before JoJo's came out, but they did a good enough job on the first two parts that they adapted that when it came down as far as Trash Crusaders, and how they elevated that again in terms of while they might not always be able to animate it as lavishly as one would like, the methods they use, in terms of color designs, sound effects and direction editing, more to make up for it. So now when we get as far as parts 4 and part 5, and it's funny how we can't imagine anybody but Divi Production doing JoJo's from now on, which is an interesting little turnaround. Just for the sheer fact that it's kind of really was a good springboard for getting Jojo's Bizarre Adventure really more out there into the wider world. I know the first two parts were presented as well, but this is one where they became widely available on legally streaming services, and also part 3 is a much beloved part of the franchise and where everybody loves the stand abilities and what they introduced here. So I think without this, we would not have parts 4 and 5 animated, and hopefully a part 6 and 7, and who God knows how much else to come.
Forever.
Yes. In the grim, dark future of 2019, there is only JoJo.
Yeah, I have a special place in my heart for JoJo's as a whole, but I still can't decide which is my favourite show series. But I think it's this. But I also like part 4 a lot. I don't know. It's not fair to judge or to talk about it, because I can't think of an answer.
Yeah. One of those things you got, you got just a franchise as a whole. that some parts are better than others.
Yeah, I think it's one thing Star Crusaders has over Ping Pong and Space Dandy is the lineage back to pulps and serials. And obviously, mm-hmm. I mean, Ping Pong is weekly, but Star Crusaders as a weekly comic can, like, trace its lineage way further back than Ping Pong can. So it's almost like built into and to the same place that a lot of TV serials come from. And so it fits TV very well, that Shonen Jump formula. Which means it will be curious when we get to the JoJo's versions which don't run in a monthly comic and how they feel as an anime, but that's a long way off.
So how did they run? Have we got time? Like, how did they run differently?
What's JoJo Lion running in?
JoJo Lion.
Ultra Jump, which is a monthly comic.
Ah. So would they have a much larger chapter that comes
they
out?
They do, yes.
Ah. Oh, imagine they did like 45-minute long episodes.
But that's not going to happen.
It can. Let's pretend. JoJo's is eternal.
I mean, it may work even better because obviously I think quite often they're adapting multiple chapters to an episode.
You just want your prestige primetime TV series version of JoJo Entity, isn't it?
Yeah. HBO's JoJo. Who knows, one day.
Well, yeah, I mean, talking of the 2014, other things, it was the year of True Detective debuting.
Whoa, that was a great show. Great show.
And in cartoons, you also had Over the Garden Wall, The Tom and Jerry Show, Clarence, Sonic Boom, and Cars Toons.
No, cartoons, Brian.
Cars Toons.
What the hell? Is that related to the animated, like, Cars film?
That is correct, yes.
Oh, it is? Oh, God.
And Sonic Boom.
It's got the characters. Probably
Sonic the Hedgehog
about.
Thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, is this?
Is that the one that's ongoing where it has these flashes of brilliance very occasionally, which people have taken upon themselves to document for me so that I had to watch Sonic Boom myself?
It's one where Sonic's got very long legs. Like, it looks like he's extra long.
It ran from 2014 to 2017. Did Sonic Boom. Let me have a look to see if there's... that was the last animation. So that might be the one you're thinking of.
It looks older than what it is. Maybe these just aren't very good screenshots.
One where Knuckles is a big, dumb fucking glued of a guy.
I think that's Boom, yeah.
That's it, yeah, it is.
Because the one previous to that was X, which is like almost a decade previous. Righty-ho, glad to have you on, Niall. Our next guest is beating the door down, so we're going to have to wrap things off.
Okay.
You know,
there's a better hide me in a wardrobe until he leaves. Okay. I'm going now. Whoa.
Where can people find your podcast, Secret of the Sailor Madness?
Okay, I'm out of wardrobe again. you could find Secret of Sailor Madness with me and my co-host Wayne over at secretsailormadness.com. We are on iTunes, Twitter, and Pod Directory as well. Talk about cartoons of various kinds, including anime the odd time, but mostly cartoon things. And and the odd theme episode, which I tried to work in as well, about some bizarre framework of things. We'll use this because cartoons in a strange way. Besides that, you can find me occasionally on Twitter at Nicholas Cage. That's NILLCULAS_CAGE.
Righty-ho. And as always, you can find us on dynamiteinthebrain.com. You can also find Niall there as part of Let's Go that I do with him and Dwayne every week. No longer on this feed. You should go and find it on its own feed. You can find that on the website or through your podcast aggregator of choice, much as you can find Dynamite in the Brain there. And you can find Anthony on Twitch at...
Oh, I thought you were going to do it. And ask you.
Okay.
That's it.
I can't remember. Where you can find
him. You're lying!
I would know. Why do I need to remember? I've got it bookmarked. What's this bookmarked? Out my brain.
Forget. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, you can find him playing various sorts of games. You're doing
Brian's favorite Resident Evil.
Where you'll see me in the comments going, "This is so archaic. Play something else."
Resident Evil 4 is pretty good. Action packed.
He's playing the original one at the moment.
Oh, okay.
The HD remaster of the original.
Yeah, it doesn't make those doors open and close any faster, though, does it?
There is actually a mod where you can download that skips them. Honestly. Wow.
The tension.
The great thing is, I'm watching it, and he's getting frustrated about all the things that I think make it an archaic game, and he shouldn't be playing it.
It's true. Like, the backtracking, and there's a list of things that are not fun. Yeah. In ways.
And it cheats to get scares by disorientating you through changing the camera angles as you go.
I like that, though. Except it's very frustrating when you get scared.
Yeah, I think it's unfair. I don't mind. Anyway, this is off-podcast discussion. We've got another podcast to record. Thank you very much for joining us, Niall. Goodbye!
Bye.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite.